it's time for the Des Moines Register on Thursday, April 18. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. My name is Twyla Glenn, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Lisa Horsch. Nice to see you today, Lisa. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinion, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's reading comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. Now let's take a look at the weather and headlines from today's Des Moines Register. According to AccuWeather, across the state today, we'll see rain in the morning. Otherwise, cloudy and cooler today. Winds north 8 to 16 miles per hour. Colder tonight. Winds west-northwest 7 to 14 miles per hour. The forecast through the weekend for central Iowa looks like this. Today, a high of 59, a low of 35. Periods of rain during the morning. Cooler today. Winds north 8 to 16 miles per hour. Colder tonight with winds west-northwest 7 to 14 miles per hour. On Friday, breezy in the afternoon with a high of 61 and a low of 33. On Saturday, mostly cloudy and cool with a high of 53 and a low of 33. And on Sunday, sunny and partly cloudy with a high of 58 and a low of 39. Tracking precipitation through the 24 hours ending 4 p.m. Wednesday, we had 1/100th of an inch. Month to date, we've had 1 inch against a normal of 1 1/98 of an inch. Year to date, we've had 5.71 inches against a normal of 6.63 inches. And last year, by this date, we had had 6.17 inches of precipitation. Sunrise today was at 6:30 a.m. Sunset tonight, 7:59 p.m. Moonrise today, 3 p.m. And moonset today, 4:30 a.m. Turning now to the front page of the Des Moines Register, there's a large picture here that says hands-on learning, and it shows Lincoln High School freshman Estrella Murata using a nail gun with the help of Clinton Webster during a Build My Future Iowa at the Iowa State Fairgrounds on Wednesday. Looks like they're having a lot of people there having a lot of interesting activities. And we'll have more on this story when we return to the inside of the front page section following Metro Iowa. The headlines for the front page stories read like this. A bill would give Iowa officials a $10,000 raise. Environmental organizations ask the EPA for emergency action on water quality. And the Iowa home developers' bankruptcy is dismissed. And now here with the first story is Lisa.
Bill would give Iowa officials a $10,000 raise. Last salary increases were in 2005 and 2007. This is written by Stephen Gruber-Miller for the Register. Iowa's governor, statewide elected officials such as the attorney general and the state auditor, and members of the Iowa legislature would each receive a $10,000 raise next year under a bill in the Iowa House. If passed, it would be the first pay increase for statewide elected officials since 2005 and the first for lawmakers since 2007. A three-member House subcommittee voted Tuesday to advance House Study Bill 750. The measure would also include annual cost of living increases for statewide officials and state legislators. Representative Stephen Holt, a Republican from Denison who served on the subcommittee, said it's lousy for politicians to talk about voting for a pay raise, even though it would not take effect until next year after voters have a chance to choose new legislators in this fall's election. But Holt supported the bill because he said without a pay increase, the makeup of the legislature is going to look very different in the years to come. The unfortunate reality we face is we want our legislature to be made up of a bunch of rich folks and retired folks, he said, because that'll be the only ones who can afford to serve up here. Or do we want the representation of the legislature to be based upon the people of Iowa? Representative Adam Zabner, a Democrat from Iowa City, agreed with Holt. I think that we want a representative government. He said there are plenty of talented people around the state, and my hope is that this legislation will help them serve their communities. Several House lawmakers have used retirement speeches this spring to call for raising legislators' pay in the future. Representative Phil Thompson, a Republican from Boone who is 33 and is leaving the Iowa House after this year, he said he can't afford to continue to serve as a representative while he and his wife are expecting their first child, Radio Iowa reported. It's unclear whether the legislation will pass this year. Representative Joel Fry, Republican from Osceola, said the bill is not agreed to by Governor Kim Reynolds or the Senate Republicans. We'll see where we go with the Senate and Governor's office, he said during the subcommittee. A spokesperson for Reynolds declined to comment. Reynolds currently receives a salary of $130,000 per year, while Attorney General Brenna Byrd makes more than $123,000, and all other statewide elected officials make just over $103,000. Iowa representatives and senators make $25,000 per year, aside from the leaders in each chamber who make $37,500. Legislators also receive a per diem payments for travel and lodging for 100 days during even-numbered years and 110 days during odd-numbered years. The per diem rate for lawmakers is $178 per day, which adds up to $17,800 for the 100 days of this year's legislative session. Polk County lawmakers receive a per diem rate of $133.50. Lawmakers are also reimbursed for mileage at 50 cents per mile. A separate bill that advanced Tuesday's House Study Bill 749 would require lawmakers to meet to adopt a new pay matrix for legislative staff. If the salary increases take effect, here's what Iowa statewide elected officials would make beginning in 2025. The governor would then receive $140,000 a year. The attorney general would be $133,699. Lieutenant governor would be $113,000. And change the Secretary of State would be $113,000. State Auditor and Treasurer and Secretary of Agriculture would all receive the same amount. Here's how much Iowa lawmakers would make next year if the bill becomes law. Iowa representative and an Iowa senator would both receive $35,000. The Speaker of the House, the House Majority Leader, the Minority Leader, the Senate President, the Senate Majority Leader, the Senate Minority Leader would all receive $47,500, and then the Senate President pro tempore and the House Speaker pro tempore would both receive $37,000.
Environmental organizations asked the Environmental Protection Agency for emergency action on water quality. 13 environmental groups are asking the Biden administration to force Iowa to adopt stricter rules governing livestock facilities in the environmentally sensitive northeastern sector of the state, citing the risk of contaminating drinking water and threatening residents' health. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency should, quote, exercise its emergency authority, end of quote, to force protections under the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act, state and national groups wrote in a petition they filed Tuesday with the EPA. They said that for decades, the state of Iowa and its officials have failed to mitigate the ongoing, immediate, and substantial endangerment to the health and residents of nitrate pollution. The petition comes after the Iowa Environmental Protection Commission of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources adopted rules Tuesday guiding siting, construction, and operation of concentrated animal feeding operations, often referred to as CAFOs, that did not include added protections in Northeast Iowa's karst region. The soil there is underlain with fractured limestone, through which manure, bacteria, and other contaminants can easily seep into surface waters and aquifers. The Environmental Protection Commission has once again proven who they really serve, not the Iowa public, but big ag polluters. Alicia Vasto, the Iowa Environmental Council's water program director, said in a call with reporters. She went on, "The commission, which is obligated to protect Iowa's environment, refuses to adopt rules that would add any burden to livestock operations, even if it will protect drinking water for tens of thousands of Iowans." She said Northeast Iowa also contains the majority of the waters that DNR has designated as outstanding Iowa waters. Those words are capitalized. That's an official designation by the Department of Natural Resources. These include Bloody Run Creek, a cold water trout stream that environmentalists say is threatened by the construction of a large beef operation nearby. Eldon McAfee, a Des Moines attorney representing Iowa livestock groups, said the state's rules on livestock facilities are stricter in karst areas and are, what he said, working to protect groundwater. The DNR declined comment on the petition. The environmental groups are hoping to duplicate Minnesota's success last year in prompting EPA intervention in that state's southeastern karst region just across the border from Iowa. In November, the EPA's Chicago-based Region 5 required Minnesota to develop and implement a long-term solution to achieve reductions in nitrate concentration in drinking water supplies there. It also required short-term actions, including testing private wells and providing drinking water to families whose private wells have high levels of nitrates. Elevated levels of nitrates in drinking water are known to increase the risk of a wide range of serious health problems, including birth defects, cancer, thyroid disease, and other illnesses, the group said in their petition. "We're asking that EPA do the same thing for Iowa that it did for Minnesota," said Michael Schmidt, an Iowa Environmental Council attorney. "The state has proven it is not willing to take on water pollution," he said. Among other measures, the state and national groups ask that the agency prohibit new or expanded livestock operations in the karst area until nitrate concentrations fall below unsafe levels, investigate specific companies and land use practices causing contamination, and take civil enforcement actions against those that threaten public health by contaminating drinking water supplies. The state and national groups said the DNR rejected a recommendation from an internal group of experts that called for requiring greater separation between the CAFOs and the karst areas. The committee, The committee, made up of geologic experts and DNR technical staff, recommended increasing the separation distance to a minimum of 25 feet from karst geology, which would reduce the risk of leaking and failure of manure storage structures through sinkholes, the group said. They said the rule adopted Tuesday would make no change to the karst provisions, leaving the separation minimum at 5 feet. That's the end of the quote from this environmental group that filed the petition. The DNR's internal karst team determined that groundwater in karst areas is vulnerable to seepage from manure storage structures, along with many other sources, according to a document the groups received through a public records request. It also says cracks in the cement or new sinkhole formation could occur in the years following construction, making it difficult to assess whether a below-ground formed structure is leaking. Rather than heeding the panel's advice, the EPC retained the existing requirements for construction in karst terrain, even though the department's own experts deemed it the existing requirements inadequate, the group said in their petition. In September, McAfee, the attorney representing livestock groups, wrote to the Iowa DNR saying cattle, pork, and poultry producers were concerned about what he called unintended consequences of the proposed separation requirement. The increase would increase construction costs, making it financially difficult or impossible to implement for most farms, wrote McAfee, who worked with the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation on the rules response. The agriculture group said an analysis showed about 25% of possible livestock sites in the karst area would be eliminated under the proposed requirements. Additionally, McAfee wrote that the change would discourage open feedlots and require dairies to convert their operations to, quote, roofed or partially roofed barns to reduce the risk from stormwater runoff and potential impacts on water quality, potentially undermining the overall goals of this chapter. That's a quote, the end of the quote from the farm group's response to the petition. The environmental group said the Northeast Karst region, with about 316,000 people in 12 counties, already is struggling with high nitrates. Recent research indicated that up to 80% of nitrate loading in karst regions can be traced to nitrogen fertilizers that are quickly flushed from soils into the karst and groundwater systems during rain events, their petition said. Based on Iowa DNR testing of private wells, 15.2% of the samples in the karst region taken over 35 years had nitrate levels above 10 milligrams per liter, the federal safe drinking water standard, while only 11.7% of samples statewide had excessive nitrate levels, according to the petition. People living in northeast Iowa have been exposed to high nitrate in drinking water for decades, said Vasto, the Iowa Environmental Council's water program director. High nitrate is a danger to infants, but an increasing number of health studies connect long-term nitrate exposure, even at levels below the drinking water standard, to various cancers. It's past time to take action to clean up our drinking water, Vasto said. In addition to the Iowa Environmental Council, other groups joining the petition include the Environmental Law and Policy Center, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, the Sierra Club Iowa Chapter, Iowa as Isaac Walton League, the Environmental Working Group, and the Food and Water Watch.
Iowa Home Developers, Bankruptcy Dismissed. This is written by Philip Sitter for the Des Moines Register. A federal court dismissed a home development company's bankruptcy case because the owners failed to submit necessary financial documents, leaving the future of properties in several Iowa cities and other states even more uncertain than before. Jeffrey and Tina Ewing, husband and wife developers from Pella, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in federal court on March 5. Their Vintage Cooperatives real estate business has built homes in independent living communities for people who are 55 years and older in Iowa, including in Altoona, Ames, Ankeny, Bettendorf, Coralville, Des Moines, Indianola, Iowa City, Johnston, and Pella. It also has communities under construction or planned in Cedar Rapids, Dubuque, Iowa City, North Liberty, and Waukee, as well as Columbia and Liberty, Missouri, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Once built by the Ewings, cooperative residents own and operate properties through elected member leaders, which means most of the existing properties are not involved in or affected by the bankruptcy case. But the Ewings bankruptcy case was dismissed on April 1, leaving the future of the property still under development, including in Waukee, with a new layer of uncertainty. Kurt Brewer, who has owned a home at Estates of Waukee as part of a deal for selling the land to the Ewings, suspects interest rates may have affected their developments. Since March of 2022, the Federal Reserve has increased its benchmark short-term interest rate from near zero to a 22-year high of 5% to 5.25% to tame inflation. Higher rates increase consumer and business borrowing costs and tend to slow economic activity. I honestly don't know where that puts us, Brewer said of the bankruptcy dismissal. At least five of the planned 29 homes have been sold at the Estates of Waukee, west of Grand Prairie Parkway off of Southeast Esker Ridge Drive. The Des Moines Register had observed work at the site in early March, though none of the homes appeared to be completely finished. There was no active construction, and there did not appear to be anyone at the site last week. Some of the more completed units had city notices taped to their front doors. Notices on one door informed readers that the utility account was past due and gas service had been disconnected as of April 8th. Why was the Ewings bankruptcy case dismissed? Judge Lee M. Jackwheel to submit financial information for their businesses and properties under development, including recent tax returns and bank cash flow and income statements. The goal of filing for bankruptcy is to shed doubt, to shed debt or find a way to repay it. Chapter 11 bankruptcy is specifically for helping businesses continue to operate while a financial reorganization plan is developed with debtors and creditors. Debtors whose case is dismissed may not be able to file for bankruptcy again for the next 6 months, or they may have to get permission from the court to file again. Court filings previously examined by the register showed the Ewing's debt to be between 100 and 199 creditors. It ran into the millions of dollars. They owed more than $1.9 million to 15 of the top creditors, banks, credit card companies, and credit unions. That debt included more than $565,000 owed for a motorhome, a luxury passenger and off-road vehicles, and a tiny home. Other documents filed later also showed more than $6.1 million owed between the Ewing's businesses and properties under development. Harvest Investments LLC owes a little over about $422,500 to Ewing Land Development and Services LLC. Ewing Land Development and Services owes Harvest Investments almost $800,000 and owes another $575,000 to the Ewing's Pella Construction and Management Services. The Ewing's properties under development in Waukee and Dubuque and in Columbia and Liberty, Missouri together owe more than $3.8 million to Ewing Land Development Services, including $273,000 owed by the estates of Waukee and more than $2.3 million owed by the estates of Columbia. Pella Construction and Management Services also is owed $364,700 by the estates of Waukee and $206,000 by the estates of Columbia. The Ewing's combined personal, financial, property, and real estate assets total about $3.1 million. Their monthly personal income was listed on one form as about $23,000 and on another as $1,750. Their monthly personal expenses were calculated to be more than $10,600. The register attempted to reach the Ewings at their real estate development business in Pella, but received an automated message that the call could not be completed. State court records from separate ongoing financial lawsuits filed by South Dakota investors and an Iowa construction contractor showed that several attempts in January and February to serve the Ewings were unsuccessful. The properties were vacant, or there was no sign of movement or response to knocks at the door, according to the filings. Austin Parker, one of the Kansas City-based attorneys representing the Ewings, previously told the Register in a statement that they're working on a plan of reorganization that would work to secure each resident in their homes, maintain the high construction quality for which each of these communities have become known for, and maximize dollars returns to not only our construction lending partners, but to the broader list of creditors that have believed in each of these projects. After the dismissal, Parker said more information would be released soon, but he did not respond to follow-up questions. His partner, Bryant Parker, previously told the Register the combination of a slowdown in sales for cooperative units, increased interest rate increases and inflation of construction costs drove the Ewings and their businesses into bankruptcy. He said to make these developments work in today's market, they need to be transformed into condominium patio homes so they are more affordable. Brewer, the Waukee homeowner, expressed sympathy for the Ewings. I'm not a victim. I feel bad for them, he said. While he acknowledged he may be in a safer position than other people who are waiting on a home, Brewer said he hopes any developer that might take over the project will let people retain their ownership and give them the value they invested. I hope they find a backer or a lender who will work with them and at least finish the development so people can live there, Brewer said. The Register attempted by phone or mail to contact several other people in the Des Moines area listed as creditors in the Ewing's former bankruptcy case, but did not immediately receive a response. Heather Brands, spokesperson for Waukee, previously said the city had not been involved with the issue so far because the Estates of Waukee is a private development. It would intervene only if construction shut down for long enough that the developer would have to reapply for building permits or the site became a hazard to the public, she said. Becky Schuett, Waukee's city clerk, said Monday that the city would continue to monitor and patrol the property to make sure there are not any code violations, but the city otherwise considers it to be an active construction site.
And that concludes the stories on the front page of the Des Moines Register. We'll move now to the Metro and Iowa section. The first story here, community remembers Caldwell Johnson. Hundreds of mourners packed Plymouth Congregational Church to say goodbye to a Des Moines community force on Wednesday. They came to remember Terry Caldwell Johnson, 68, as an advocate for Des Moines Public Schools, area children and families, and the Oak Ridge community. She served for almost two decades as CEO of Oak Ridge Neighborhood and on the Des Moines School Board. Excuse me. In 2023, Caldwell Johnson announced she had been diagnosed with cancer. Last month, she resigned from the Des Moines School Board, where she had served since 2006 to focus on her health. Over an 18-month period, she served multiple times as school board chair and vice chair. We share in Terry's family's sadness over the loss of such a force for good and excellence in our community, said Pamela Stewart, St. Paul AME Church, Des Moines, at the start of the service. It was standing room only as lawyers, past and present, Des Moines school board members, community leaders, and others who were touched by Caldwell Johnson's work came together to celebrate her life with music and stories. State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad spoke about the need to honor Caldwell Johnson. Abdul-Samad has long called her the mayor because no matter where she went, she made it better, he said. Terry's legacy is left in each and every one of us, Abdul-Samad said to applause. What she did touched everyone in this church. It touched the babies in the schools and touched the neighbors in Oak Ridge, she said. Public School Superintendent Ian Roberts, who credits Caldwell Johnson with bringing him to Iowa, spoke about how the long-term board member was a mentor to him in the short time that they knew each other. Caldwell Johnson told the new superintendent about her diagnosis early on. He recounted how Caldwell Johnson felt she could beat the disease in part because of her strong faith. "I believe you then, I believe you now," Roberts told those in attendance. "Terry, cancer did not win. God just needed one of his best to come home," he said.
Thunderstorms, tornadoes make way through Iowa. The path of an EF0 tornado in Dallas County on April 16th is shown with a map. And so we are looking at the tornado started just northwest of Dallas Center, kind of heading toward Minburn, but then it kind of made a little jag and went to the east side of Minburn and then kind of fizzled out northeast of Minburn. Disaster proclamation issued for six counties. This is written by Victoria Reyna Rodriguez. Iowa saw multiple rounds of severe weather Tuesday, from thunderstorms to tornadoes. A few severe thunderstorms in central Iowa also produced hail 1 to 2 inches in diameter and wind gusts of up to 60 miles per hour. Rural central Iowa experienced one tornado in Dallas County. A tornado touched down shortly after 11 a.m., tracking from south to north across the northern part of Dallas County, according to the National Weather Service. It was 7 miles long with a width of about 50 yards. The National Weather Service shared on social media Wednesday afternoon. Winds were estimated to be between 75 and 85 miles per hour with an EF rating of 0. The path of the tornado ran from northwest of Dallas Center to northeast of Minburn. It was on the ground for about 5 minutes. A Dallas County Sheriff's Office employee told the Register on Tuesday that three agricultural buildings were severely damaged or destroyed due to the tornado. Other minor damage was reported in the area. One tornado tracked through both Calhoun and Pocahontas counties in northwest Iowa, touching down shortly after 2:30 p.m. The tornado periodically lifted, the National Weather Service said, moving south to north. Tornado ratings have not yet been determined by, as officials are waiting for damage reviews. Severe thunderstorms tracked across the Quad Cities, the National Weather Service said, in two waves between 11 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Monday. National Weather Service reported that there was damage from strong wind gusts, hail, and at least one confirmed tornado, which happened near Minneapolis. Storm damage teams will assess the damage to determine ratings. Emergency managers reported a tornado near Sioux Center, as well as two other reports near the area. Governor Kim Reynolds announced Wednesday that she issued a disaster proclamation for Alamaki, Cass, Des Moines, Fayette, Henry, and Lee counties in response to Tuesday's severe weather. Residents in those counties will be eligible for the Iowa Individual Assistance Grant Program, which offers grants up to $5,000 for households making up to 200% of the federal poverty level. Receipts are required to be reimbursed for expenses like home and car repairs, replacement of food or clothing, or temporary shelter. Applications are available at homelandsecurity.iowa.gov/assistance. Those facing serious needs can also utilize the Disaster Case Advocacy Program. An advocate will be assigned to victims to help create a recovery plan and offer referrals to other resources. Details are available at iowacommunityaction.org. Most of the Iowa experienced excess winds of up to 40 miles per hour. Wind gusts due to thunderstorms brought in winds of 50 to 60 miles per hour. The highest wind gusts were reported in Estherville at 62 miles per hour. Des Moines International Airport experienced winds of 43 miles per hour. Are storms like this normal weather for this time of year? Simply put, yes. Alan Curtis, meteorologist at the National Weather Service Des Moines, said this was a typical low-pressure spring storm system that neighboring states also experienced. A low-pressure system will typically cause clouds, rain, and storms as they suck air into them, according to the National Organization of the Atmospheric Association. A high-pressure system is constantly pushing air away, typically bringing clear blue skies.
Des Moines School Board okays $641 million budget for next school year, including teacher raises. The Des Moines School Board has approved a $641.9 million budget for the coming school year, an increase from the current 2023 and 24 budget of $610 million. The board voted 6-0 to green light the new budget during Tuesday's regular meeting. New board member Skylar Mayberry Mays abstained from voting. Board Chair Jackie Norris, Mayberry Mays, Anna Campos, and Patrick Dix all attended the meeting virtually. The larger budget is because of a new law raising teacher pay, a 3.5% pay increase for all of Des Moines Public Schools bargaining staff, and funds from Physical Plant and Equipment Levy, or PPEL, and Secure Advanced Vision for Education, or SAVE, to be used for district projects, said Shashank Arora, the district's chief financial officer. PPEL is used to cover district, but that's the physical plant and equipment levy. PPEL is used to cover district building maintenance and repair costs. The SAVE, or the Secure Advanced Vision for Education, is a statewide penny sales tax for school districts that can be used for school infrastructure projects. The 3.5% pay increase is higher than what we have historically given, Aurora said. While planning the budget, Des Moines officials had to find $14 million in savings. Staff was able to avoid cuts by using $5.25 million from the district's fund balance to help balance the budget. The board is expected to amend the budget in June after the group sets its goals. The cost of the board's goals are not expected to increase the budget significantly, Aurora said in an interview after the meeting. Des Moines school staff cut $14 million ahead of the 2024-25 school year. The cuts included 10 full-time equivalent positions from district high schools and 4% of full-time positions from across the districts, totaling about $3 million. Another $1.5 million was saved by changing the district's prescription drug health care plan. Medications are not expected to be impacted. The remainder of the budget was balanced using the fund balance, income from interest totaling $3 million, and an additional $1.25 million in state school aid. In past years, officials cut $12.2 million ahead of the 2023-24 school year and $9.9 million going into the 2022-23 school year. In related news, the Des Moines Public Schools says it must slash $14 million from the coming budget. So what gets cut? And there will be some repeats in here. The pay increases are one of the biggest changes to the budget, Aurora said. Governor Kim Reynolds signed House Files 2612, which raises pay for the first-year teachers and teachers with 12 years of experience, into law last month. Additionally, the law restructures funding for Iowa's area education agencies. The newly signed law raises minimum starting teacher pay to $47,500 for the 2024-25 school year and $50,000 for the 25-26 school year. Teachers with at least 12 years of experience will see their pay go up to $60,000 for the 24-25 school year and $62,000 in the following school year. The state has allocated funds to help schools recover the cost. And in another related action, Iowans are getting new property tax explainers in the mail. Here's how to decipher them. First, the question, what is the 2024-25 school year tax rate? Well, the Des Moines School Board approved a proposed tax rate of $14.68 per $1,000 valuation on a $100,000 home. The rate is down from this year's tax rate of $15.15 per $1,000 valuation on a home. This means taxes will go from $828 to $682. But I'm looking at this. This doesn't sound right. Yes, the tax rate did go down from $14.68. Let me start this over because I don't know if you're confused, but I am, and I think it's the way I read it. So I'm going to start this over, and this is about the 2024-25 school year tax rate. The Des Moines the impact of this is that the tax rate is actually going down. So that's what we're going to hear. The Des Moines School Board approved a proposed tax rate of $14.68 per $1,000 valuation on a $100,000 home. The rate is down from this year's tax rate of $15.15 per $1,000 valuation on a home. This means taxes will go from $828 to $682 on a $100,000 home. The decrease is due in part to an increase in property taxes. So in an additional related story, Des Moines Public Schools Board approve a reduced tax rate as property values increases. House File 2612 also increased school aid, known as SSA, by 2.5%. Des Moines school officials originally budgeted for only a 2% increase. Officials expect to receive $1.6 million from the state for the 1,381 students who attend private schools using the Education Savings Account program. The funds are used to help school districts make up for state aid they will lose if a student attends a private school. And finally, will the district close any buildings to save money? Decisions to close buildings are not expected to impact the budget until the 2025-26 and 2026-27 school years. A facility study by BBS Architects is expected to be released in May, according to board documents.
Bill pushes Western Civilization Studies. This is written by Galen Bashir for the Des Moines Register. Iowa lawmakers are on the brink of passing new social studies requirements that include a focus on Western civilization, among other themes and topics. Senate Republicans revived the proposal in a last-minute amendment to a separate bill Tuesday, approving a plan for the State Board of Education to review and revise Iowa social studies standards over the objections of Democrats. Those new standards would be required to include instruction on the structure of government, civics, and exemplary figures and important events in Western civilization, the United States, and the state of Iowa. It also specifies teaching on the crimes against humanity that have occurred under communist regimes since 1917. A previous bill containing the curriculum requirements passed the House but died ahead of one of the session's funnel deadlines. As lawmakers enter the final days of session, Senator Brad Zahn, a Republican from Urbandale, added the requirements to House File 2545, which commissions a state review of standards and curriculum. It came over here, and it was negotiated into the bill we're talking about, Zahn said, of talks between House and Senate Republicans. Democrats unsuccessfully attempted to remove references to Western civilization throughout the bill, seeking to replace them with world civilization. Senator Herman Quernbach, a Democrat from Ames, argued that when using the former term, what we're really talking about is white people. When we direct the study four times over to just Western civilization, we're giving a signal of the type of results we want, Quernbach said. Zahn responded that he didn't believe the language in the bill prohibited any teaching of other societies or world figures. There's nothing here to say that it is not a part of or cannot be a part of curriculum in this amendment, Zahn said. Democrats remained opposed to the amended bill, with Senator Molly Donahue, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, saying it is not the job of the legislature to prescribe curriculum that would limit teachers' time and resources. The version of the bill that earlier this session passed the House had curriculum requirements sourced from Civics Alliance, a New York-based group aimed to stop civics education from being turned into a recruitment tool of the progressive left. That's a quote there. The National Council for the Social Studies, which says it represents more than 10,000 educators, has opposed the Civic Alliance proposed standards. Senators approved of the altered bill in a 33-14 party-line vote, sending it back to the House for final approval.
Iowa lawmakers okay a statewide ban on guaranteed income programs. Local governments would be banned from adopting guaranteed income programs like a Central Iowa pilot program that provides low-income Iowans with $500 per month. This bill would be under legislation headed to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk. The Iowa Senate voted 35-13 Tuesday to pass House File 2319, sending it to Reynolds for her signature. The House passed the bill on March 5. The bill would halt Central Iowa's Uplift pilot program, which provides 110 Iowans from Polk, Dallas, and Warren counties with $500 per month for 2 years. The payments, which are unrestricted, are intended to assist Iowans in covering the cost of basic needs. Republicans who backed the bill criticized Uplift, arguing it was the wrong direction to go in while addressing the issues of poverty and expressing concern that guaranteed income programs could become more widespread. I believe that we have the ultimate concern of the taxpayer at hand, said Senator Scott Webster, Republican of Bettendorf, who said, "We have done a lot of things in this particular chamber to help poverty," he said. Democrats characterized the bill as an attack on low-income families, saying it was not the role of the legislature to intervene in local efforts such as Uplift. "You've come up with nothing to solve poverty," said Senator Tony Bisignano, a Democrat from Des Moines. "And if you're not going to help, get out of the way," he said. Counties and cities could not adopt or enforce an ordinance or rulemaking payments under the legislation. Uplift would be allowed to remain in effect until January 1 of 2025 if the bill becomes law. The project's pilot program is scheduled to end in May of 2025 after 2 years of monthly payments. The bill exempts work study and other training programs. The Attorney General's office under the bill would be able to send cease and desist orders to any county that adopts or enforces a program that provides guaranteed income. Counties that violate the ban would be subject to lawsuits. Uplift is led by the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement and supported by 30 community groups, including Polk County. Its funding comes from 11 public and private sources. Participants receive debit cards reloaded each month with $500. The vast majority, 81% of the program's 110 participants, are Polk County residents, and at least 65% live in the metropolitan area. The group, many of which are working full-time, reported earning an average household income of just over $24,000 annually. In a statement on March 11, the Harkins Center said the Uplift Project is designed to answer the question of whether guaranteed basic income programs are effective and will provide important real-world, information for policymakers considering similar programs in the future. We support the project because we want to know the answer. Only once the results are known can the debate be truly informed, the statement said. Banning basic income projects preemptively, without first learning whether they're helpful or not, cuts off a possible avenue for improving the lives of Iowans. That's the end of the quote from the Harkins Center.
New principal Judy Rowland takes over at Waukee High. This is written by Philip Sitter. The Waukee Community School District has named the new principal for Waukee High School. Judy Rowland has been the high school's associate principal since 2015, but Rowland has worked at Waukee High School for 21 years, according to a news release from the school district. This community's unwavering support will continue to enable us to create an environment where students can explore their passions with guidance from some of the most talented and dynamic educators in the field, Rowland said in the release. Her hire as principal needs school board approval. Rowland would replace Carrie Justman, who was named Dallas Center Grimes Community School District's first director of human resources, according to a news release from that district. He had previously been principal and assistant principal at Dallas Center Grimes High School. Rowland was previously been an assistant principal and dean of students at Waukee High School. Among her accolades, the School Administrators of Iowa and Iowa Alliance for Arts Education named her as the 2024 Fine Arts Administrator of the Year for leadership in developing and advocating for the arts. She is a graduate of Iowa State University and also earned a master's degree and specialist in educational administration degree from Drake University. Terry Hurlburt, Waukee's associate superintendent, said in the district's news release, "I can think of no one better to lead Waukee High School into the future, and I'm excited to see her in her new role."
And that concludes the stories in the Metro and Iowa section. We're going to return now to the interior of the front page section, which has a lot of Iowa stories in it today, so that'll be fun. First one is in reference to the picture on the front page that we started out with, and there are a couple of more pictures associated, and this is about students getting hands-on experience at an annual job event. And these two pictures show, there looks like there are a whole bunch of students there, so it's nice to see such a turnout for this. The students in this particular picture are using a robotic arm in the Marshalltown Community College booth at the Build My Future Iowa. This was held on the fairgrounds on Wednesday. And in the second picture, there are more people using a nail gun with the assistance of Clinton Weber from the Build My Future Iowa in Des Moines. And here's the story. For Magnus Alyatz, the opportunity to operate an excavator was a hands-on experience, but his heart lies in diesel mechanics. No worries for Alyatz, however. A freshman at Manson Northwest Weber High School, west of Fort Dodge, the Build My Future event held Wednesday at the Iowa State Fairgrounds had opportunities to explore the diesel mechanics career path and many other skilled trades. The 7,600 students from over 160 school districts across the state had the chance to try their hand at occupations ranging from plumbing and heating to carpentry, heavy equipment operation, healthcare, aviation, and even conservation technology. Students from all over the state attended the event, with some traveling more than 3 hours, said Brandon Patterson of the Des Moines Home Builders Association, one of the sponsors of the day-long event. The event, now in its fifth year, has more than tripled in size as students seek well-paying alternatives to fields that require increasingly costly four-year college degrees. Patterson said hands-on opportunities for welding tends to be a big draw for students, as well as operating large equipment, whether it's the real thing or computer simulation. The students always love all of the hands-on activities, which is what this event is all about, he said. Adding in new career pathways like healthcare has opened up more opportunities to get your hands on those careers as well, he added. While some students were busy in the varied industries building, trying their hands at welding or nail-gunning plywood panels, others, like Aljuts, were in the parking lot having a go at operating heavy equipment or smoothing freshly mixed concrete. Like most of the participants trying the excavator, Aljuts had little problem using the machinery to pick up and stack rubber tires. For his goal of becoming a diesel technician, he said, he's looking at apprenticeship programs that offer training, experience, and the needed tools of the trade. Those three elements, training, experience, and tools, are exactly what Housby University dealership in Ankeny offers the in-house training program to recruit often hard-to-find diesel mechanics. Establishing the year-long mechanic training program grew out of necessity as the company struggled to attract qualified applicants, said Harrison Meyer of Housby. Housby University, housed in the company's new state-of-the-art facility, provides all class materials, a monthly housing stipend, a free toolbox and tool set, and a guaranteed job at completion. The Housby program is completing its second year and requires a 2-year employment commitment in return for the training and the tools, Meyer said. And unlike other post-high school educational pursuits, students coming out of Housby University will be debt-free as they start their careers, he said. Events like Build My Future give his company an opportunity to get their training program out in front of interested students, he said. Aaron Slotta of Housby, which provided the excavator, had an explanation for why the students performed well with the machinery. It's all joystick operated, like video games, which helps, he said. Many of the businesses represented at the event on Wednesday particularly pointed at commercial drivers still being at a premium. Nick Ripley of Manats, Inc., a concrete and paving contractor based in Poweshiek County's Brooklyn, said that while the company's ability to hire has improved of late, it's still looking for drivers. The Manats website on Wednesday listed more than 25 openings. Across the whole industry, an experienced driver can make $75,000 a year, Ripley said. The Build My Future event has attracted about 22,000 participants in its 5-year run, growing from 2,100 in its initial year. We had one company say that it was able to attract 30 apprentices at last year, Patterson said, pointing out the efficiency of getting that larger response from a single event. For companies, it's a lot more attractive to be able to reach this many people at one event as opposed to having to attend multiple job fairs, he said.
Iowa lawmakers move closer to board consolidation. This is written by Stephen Gruber Miller. Iowa lawmakers are moving closer to passing legislation that would consolidate dozens of boards and commissions in Iowa, including altering the makeup and duties of the Iowa Civil Rights Commission and the Human Rights Board. House lawmakers voted 54-42 on Tuesday to pass Senate File 2385. 8 Republicans joined every Democrat in opposition, while all other Republicans were in favor. The House vote sends the bill back to the Iowa Senate, which voted 30-14 on April 10th to pass its own version. During House debate Tuesday, Democrats zeroed in on changes they said would consolidate power in the state's executive branch and limit underrepresented Iowans' ability to serve on state boards. We had the opportunity to come together, get rid of some boards and commissions that were clearly unnecessary, and make a government that was more efficient and listen to Iowans, said Representative Adam Zabner, from a Democrat from Iowa City. What we ended up with was a power grab that takes away the rights of Iowans and the voices of Iowans in the process of government. Representative Jane Bloomingdale, a Republican from Northwood, said the bill's House floor manager, she said she thinks the most important part of the bill is the process it sets up to review every board and commission once every 4 years going forward. If we made a mistake, if we feel like the merged boards weren't right, we'll unmerge them, she said. If we feel like we kept a board that should have been eliminated, we will eliminate them. If we feel like a group should be merged to make a better board, then we'll merge them. The legislation that lawmakers are considering is based on Governor Kim Reynolds' proposal to consolidate 111 of Iowa's 256 boards and commissions, shrinking the number by 43%. Reynolds' proposal is based on recommendations from a committee established as part of a massive state government reorganization plan she signed into law last year that reduced cabinet-level state government agencies from 37 to 16. The law established a Boards and Commission Review Committee, which met several times last year, to develop a report with recommendations that forms the basis for Reynolds' proposal. The bill would also require every remaining board and commission to be reviewed once every 4 years to determine whether it should continue to exist. The bill requires governmental bodies, including boards and commissions, to offer hybrid, virtual, or remote options for the public to participate. It also removes the requirement that most boards meet at specific meeting times or hold meetings at certain intervals, such as quarterly or monthly. The group also recommended eliminating the gender balance requirement that mandates a balance of men and women on state and local boards and commissions. Reynolds signed a law April 3rd that reveals that requirement effective July 1st. The bill would change the Iowa Civil Rights Commission, which hears cases about discrimination in housing, employment, and other areas, by placing many of its duties under the Office of Civil Rights, which is overseen by a director appointed by Reynolds. Betty Andrews, president of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP, said she has grave concerns about how the bill would change the Civil Rights Commission. If enacted, this bill would deliver a crushing blow to civil rights in Iowa and reduce the opportunity for diverse voices in state government, Andrews said in an April 9th statement. We encourage anyone with concerns about this dangerously regressive bill to contact their legislators immediately. The bill would also reduce the commission's membership from 7 to 5. Its members are appointed by the governor. This particular commission was set up from the beginning to make up for the deficiencies, the inability, and in some cases, the choice of folks not to follow the law and to continue to discriminate, said Representative Ross Wilburn, a Democrat from Ames. So really, by doing this, you will be taking power and voice away from the people, those who have been discriminated, groups that have been historically disenfranchised. Bloomingdale disputed that the commission would be negatively affected, saying it would still exist and would be able to do its work. We're not taking away any civil rights, Bloomingdale said. We're putting a director in charge of an agency, just like every other department. The director is in charge and the director is accountable for her department. Representative Charlie Thompson, a Republican from Charles City, said the state civil rights laws were carefully constructed after lengthy debate and compromise, which he contrasted with the current legislation. I think it's disappointing, to say the least, that we are dealing with it in a rather hurried manner without the consent or consensus of many of the people involved, he said. Another change would eliminate the commissions on the status of African Americans, Asians, Pacific Islanders, persons with disabilities, the status of women, Native American Affairs and Latino Affairs, and transfer those commissions' duties to the Human Rights Board, which would be reduced in size. Representative Jerome Amos, Jr., a Democrat from Waterloo, said one person from those committees won't be enough to represent the range of views of that group, even if they still have a seat on the Human Rights Board. Originally, you had a commission or a board that actually was made up of those different ethnic groups, and they actually had a voice, a collective voice, he said. But what this is going to do, it's going to take away that voice. Bloomingdale said the groups being consolidated would be able to work together on the Human Rights Board. I think they have a greater voice, and they can possibly learn from each other, she said.
And before we go to the birthdays, we'll take a look at the USA Today's 50 State Roundup highlight, which today is from Ohio. This is from Koshkonto. I said that several times before to make sure I could say it right, and I still didn't do it. Coshocton. Many people believe farming is old-fashioned, but it can often be the cutting edge of technology, even in a rural Ohio county. And this notice is accompanied by a picture of a robot installed at Lely's robotic vector feeding system to decrease labor. And it shows this robot moving down a feeding trough for cattle. L.B. Porteous Farms was recognized earlier this year with an Environmental Stewardship Award from the Ohio Cattlemen's Association. And Amy Porteous, who leads the multi-generational family farm with her family, detailed projects improving the farm's facilities in a keynote speech at the recent annual Ag Day celebration in London. A luncheon, not a London, luncheon. Recent upgrades have allowed them to go from 250 commercial Angus cows in a 50-year-old building to more than 700 in a new state-of-the-art facilities. Upgrades includes a new aeration system to remove bacteria and reduce emissions, and the Lely's robotic vector feeding system, which automatically feeds those cattle.